No, not. You have to first click on it. So bring it down.
We've been doing so good all the time.
I know we're having to. Oh, there it is.
There we go.
Okay. So, like I said, this is a very basic.
And make it bigger. Make it as large as you can on the screen.
No. No.
There you are.
Okay. That's bigger.
That's bigger.
Well, no, I guess that's fine.
Oh, maybe, is that all right?
Maybe we can get rid of this.
People see it.
Maybe we can get rid of.
Shake your head if you can see it, those who I can see. Okay.
Okay, all right. So like I said, successful fundraising, board leadership and active participation is key. I'm gonna have a number of handouts that I'm gonna pull up a little later and I'll refer to them as I talk about the topics. So in the world of board fundraising, I believe that the board pretty much is the foundation of nonprofit fundraising. So taking a look at the way this presentation will be broken down, it'll be broken down into three parts: laying the foundation, identifying and planning, and connecting and soliciting. All right? So laying the foundation. Boards want to have a well-defined strategic board recruitment and orientation process. This is extremely important because you're identifying who's going to be helping you support your organization. More importantly, it's important to make sure that you're identifying and recruiting the most capable people, people that are willing to step up and be a part of your fundraising operation and the activities that you have going on throughout the year. The board fundraising commitment, how much, when, and how, we'll touch on that. And all board members need to have a strong and committed all organizations need to have a strong and committed board development committee. What I normally would do is say, how many of you have a development committee on your boards right now? So if you do, you're in good shape. I'll talk about why they're important and the role that they play. If you don't have one, often what I find is it's usually because a board is very small and doesn't have the resources to break out committees that are focused around fundraising. So the whole board is in, all hands on deck, or because they just haven't thought about it yet. And there's other pieces of the board that are managing that fundraising piece, okay? So board recruitment and orientation. You wanna make fund development the cornerstone of your conversations when you're recruiting prospective board members. And there's a reason for that. You do not want to be reluctant to use the F word for fear of scaring off potential board members, fundraising. I also ask groups to raise their hands if they're afraid to ask for money. And that's often something that needs to be discussed at the very beginning of the recruitment process. You want to be very upfront and candid about fundraising responsibilities. Commitment. Board giving is essential because it increases the level of ownership board members feel toward the organization, right? It enables your organization to raise funds from other entities. It gives you the ability and the leverage to go out and solicit funds from organizations if your board has ownership and feels good about the organization. It shows other prospective board donors that your board members are good stewards of your organization. And it makes board members feel good about their involvement. So if you're going out and you're soliciting funds from a potential donor or from a foundation or a trust, often you'll be asked, especially if you're asking for a major gift, because most people that are giving a major gift are gonna be responsible about how they're giving out their money. They're gonna ask possibly, do you have 100% giving on your board of directors? And if you're not able to say that, that's an issue. They're probably going to think twice about supporting your organization. When you're able to say that you have 100% board giving, you're showing good stewardship for the organization. You're showing that your board members are committed to its mission and that they want to be a part of the fundraising process. And that this is how they show that commitment and that support. It's one of the ways in which they show that commitment and support. And that is by making gifts themselves. So believe me that this question can pop up by potential donors when they're asked, when you're soliciting them or talking to them about supporting your organization, okay? Commitment, how much, when, and how. Board members should all give at the meaningful level. It should be a stretch gift. Not everybody has the same capacity. And we all understand that. There's nothing wrong with people giving different levels of gifts to an organization. What is important is that it be 100% of the board, all right? You want to decide whether or not to require board members to give a set dollar amount or a minimum gift. I usually recommend not to give or provide, not to ask your board members or make your board members make a minimum gift. And the reason is, there's two reasons. When you are recruiting a new board member, that board member may be coming to the table with a lot of assets and resources. One of them might not be that they have the means to make a large gift to your organization. They might be able to open up doors for your organization. They might be able to identify other people that are interested in your organization's mission. They might have a connection at a local foundation or trust or a business or corporation. Let's say you say we have a minimum gift of $500 per year, and you're in the midst of the conversations with a prospective board member, and that board member doesn't have those means and thinks about it as you're having this conversation. The end result is they may not join your board because they don't want to feel inadequate about their giving. But what you're leaving on the table is probably a lot more money because of their contacts, their connections, and the doors that they can open. So minimum gifts can be a hindrance to bringing strong board members onto the board that can bring assets and financial support to the organization, just not as much from their own means. The other reason is, when you set a minimum gift and you have board members that have means, what are they going to give when they have to make their gift to your organization? That minimum gift is $500 and they have the means to make a $2,500 gift. What are they going to give your organization? At this point, I would ask you all to say, what are they going to give? Well, they're going to give the $500, right? That's what they're going to give, guaranteed. So minimum gifts are not recommended. But what is recommended is that conversations take place at the very beginning of the recruitment process, mm-hmm. and that board members understand it is their responsibility to make a gift for the organization so that your board is strong and has 100% giving. And we ask board members to make a gift of a stretch. So, you know, they should be supporting your organization to the best of their ability, and not everybody has the same ability. So you want to decide about minimum gifts. You want to, board members' gifts and pledges should be secured before you're out there asking and soliciting others, because remember, you want that 100% giving and you want them to be able to show that they're good stewards. And you want to make the process personal, challenging, and exciting for board members. Okay?
Ow.
Board Development Committee, what is its role? So I talked a little bit about this at the very beginning. I've always worked with organizations that have had development committees. And the reason I found this very good is because they're kind of like a supplement of development staff. If you don't have a large development office, and for many organizations, they don't even have development staff. So they're working directly with their boards, the executive directors and program staff. So the boards are playing the most important role around fundraising. So when you have a development committee that is based off of your board of directors, it really does supplement that role of development. And it's kind of like an extension of having staff that are out there helping your organization fundraise. So board development committees, they provide reach. They give additional reach to the organization so that you can get out there and fundraise. They're your cheerleaders. They're the ones who are coming into full board meetings and saying, we've got this big event coming up. We have to raise this amount of money by this amount of time. We need everybody to jump in and be a part of this process. It's going to be exciting. We're going to make it happen. And the development committee is working on all the logistics. Stay tuned. It provides accountability. And I'll talk a little bit about that. There's a handout I'm going to show you right now. I'm going to pull it up. It's called the Board Service Pledge Form. And this goes back to making sure that your board members each make that gift to your organization. And the board service pledge is something that I recommend. I also recommend one-on-one meetings between the board chair and board members about their support for the organization and their giving, I recommend that those take place at the very beginning of your fiscal year, because those conversations help provide the foundation for your fundraising. And that's why the first section of this is called Laying the Foundation. Those conversations give your development director, your development staff, the ability to understand what the basement, what the foundation is going to be for your fundraising for the annual appeal or whatever it is that your annual goal is. Once those conversations are done and those board service pledge forms have been filled out by board members and the development staff understand how much is going to be raised by the board itself, then it gives the development staff the ability to bridge that gap and to build their development plan for the year based on that gap, okay? And it also tells them what to expect from board members. So you meet with board member A, more board member B, board member C, and board member A says, I'm going to be able to open up a door to this foundation. I can get us a meeting with them. Or I know the guy that just opened up a business down on the corner. I think he's really trying to get involved in the community. I met him last week. I'd like to approach him. I will be a part of that meeting. Or I can get four people to come to our annual gala, or I can fill a table at our annual gala. These are the things that the board service pledge and that initial discovery provide to the development staff and to the development committee. All right, it provides accountability. I'm going to pull up that the board service pledge so that you can see it. And we're going to be sending these out when, let me see if I can find it here. Here we go. Now, it's called Lend a Hand. I made up the organization, but this is the actual board service pledge that I used. Just to give you some background information, before I went to the Rhode Island Foundation, I was the head of development. I was vice president of institutional advancement at one of Rhode Island's largest social service agencies called Child and Family. I was there for 11 years, and I started at the very beginning of their capital campaign to build a $7 million community center. And I ended 11 years later with a full annual celebration of the organization's 150th anniversary. So I kind of had these bookends, but one of the first things I learned was that I needed to have conversations with my board members. And this board service pledge form helped me identify the things and the tools that I could use from board members throughout the year. And it gave those board members the ability to say, this is how much money I'm going to give to the organization this year. And these are the doors I'm going to open for the organization. Okay. Mm-hmm. There we go. Okay. And the development committee also sets the tone for the organization's fundraising culture. That's the last piece I wanted to share with you. That's really important. They're setting the tone. They're organizing the fundraising activities with your development staff. They're full in. I see it as a team sport. Development staff, development committee, working together, raising money for the organization. So, what should board members expect from their organization when they come on board, right? They should expect a clear explanation of their role in fundraising. They should know what that role is before they join the board, okay? That's very, very important. They should have access to training in fundraising. It's kind of like what this is. If you were able to provide all of your board members the opportunity to be involved in something like this, they'd be good to go for the most part, especially focused around their responsibilities. They should have a choice of fundraising activities. This is extremely important, I think, in engaging board members and getting them excited about fundraising for your nonprofit. The choice of fundraising activities can range anywhere from making thank you calls all the way up through actually soliciting for a gift. I'm gonna pull up another handout. This is another one that we will send out to you. This is what I call my board service activities form. Get there. And it is this one. So these are a number of boards, a board member fund development activities. And you'll see I've got it broken down into three different categories. You've got identifying and connecting for your organization. I've got cultivating and stewarding for your organization. And then communicating and advocating. So they have a huge choice of activities that they can participate in, and they're still supporting the fund development activities of the organization. They're still supporting the development staff. They're still supporting the development committee. Not everybody is comfortable asking for money, but you want to have your board members, all of them, in some way connected to fund development. And this form gives you those opportunities. It's just a set of ideas around activities. I'm sure you have plenty of your own. My favorite is always the small, intimate cultivation event where you have the heartstring speech. You have somebody hosting the event that is a past donor or a board member or a stakeholder, and they're doing it maybe in their home or at their business. The board members have gone out. They've identified two or three people that they'd like to think about supporting the organization, interesting them in this cocktail party. The heartstrings is usually a client or somebody that has benefited from the services of the organization. And then you close the deal. At the end, you have a light touch materials as people are leaving. They can take that donor envelope and think about making a gift. And usually the executive director will close out the program, or the board chair will close out the program, or the head of development will close out the program. And their last piece will be, thank you to the host, but more importantly, please think about supporting our organization. And they see that donor material on their way out the door. These can be a hard ask, they can be a soft ask. I recommend them as a soft ask because you're cultivating. You're cultivating potential donors to be a part of your organization. Okay. Clear explanation of the board role, fundraising, access to training.
Do you want to stop and have people talk?
One more slide.
Okay, great.
Access to training and fundraising, a choice of fundraising activities, and then organizational transparency and accountability. Okay. And then the last slide in this section, all right, is what organizations should expect from their board members. Board members need to learn about and advocate for their organization. They need to understand what the mission is. What is the vision? What are they raising money for? Why is it important to support the organization? They need to commit to an annual gift. We've already covered that. It's extremely important. 100% board giving. They need to work closely with development staff when the organization has development staff. It's a team sport. Remember that. Always introduce potential friends to the organization. Conversations in your local grocery store, your book club, at the gym, whatever it is, when you see an opportunity as a board member, it is your responsibility to bring people into the organization and to educate them about the organization. They may not be interested, and you'll know that fairly soon. However, if they are interested, what do you have to lose, right? And create authentic relationships with donors. It's extremely important. 99.9% of fundraising is relationship building. That's all it is. Okay, Lisa, I'm ready for questions. We're gonna go do the second section next.
So stop sharing your screen.
Yep.
And then we'll all be able to see each other, those of
Got
us.
Got it.
So I unmuted everyone. For those of you that aren't unmuted, that's because you muted yourselves. I can't unmute you. So when you want to talk, then you have to unmute yourself. So you gave us a lot to think about. I'm sure people have thoughts. So someone.
Any questions? I usually ask like after every slide.
So no one here is saying they have any questions?
Who does a board service pledge? I've got a question here, and it's from Lisa. Oh, Lisa. So the board service pledge is board members should be filling out the board service pledge. Now, I will tell you, when I was head of development, I was the one who met with the board members. I don't know that I recommend that. I think it is the board's responsibility. What was that?
No, nothing. I muted them.
Okay, sorry. I was the one who met with board members, but I do think it is the board's responsibility to make those meetings happen. So I think any combination thereof, if you have somebody like me, the development officer or the head of development, should be the head of development, in the meeting with the board member that is being discussed, that you're talking to about fundraising and what they're going to do for the organization, I think it's important to either have the development committee chair, who's a board member, or have the board chair as part of those discussions.
I meant which agency does
service pledges,
because I thought that was really interesting. And I also thought that the service activities form was really interesting, because I'm not sure everyone does that, you know.
That really
gets people, board members, knowing what they're expected to do right when they come on board. So I wonder which agencies do either of those two, if any.
Does anybody do it? I see people nod your heads or yes.
Elaine.
Okay. I can see Belinda and Tara. You don't do it. You do do
it. I would like to do it.
Unmute yourself. Okay.
Any other questions?
You guys, this is a group for you. This is what you all wanted to talk about. Does anyone have any thoughts?
Amy.
People do this already? Is this some...
Amy's trying to unmute herself.
Got it.
I am. Hi. Amy from Detroit here. So I'm trying to find it on my computer right now, and I'm happy to share it with you. We did something different with our board this year to accelerate our board giving. We have 100% giving on our board. We have
about
34 board members, and we get great attendance at our board meetings. But we found last year we were chasing them down for their board gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And so we wanted to front load our campaign this year, and our campaign opens in November. So at our October board meeting, we gave everybody a board giving sheet, which gave them basically a list of things that they had given to in our agency with over the past 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then we left blank spots for them to fill out what they wanted to do this year. So it was like a worksheet.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to share it with you, because for us, it worked really well. And I would say that we've gotten about 40% of our board gifts in already.
That's excellent.
Maybe even more, because actually, I think our development associate was kind of filling me in that some people had called her. So I've gotten a lot through email. We sent it digitally before the meeting so that people could think about it and see what their past giving had been.
Mm-hmm.
And then our development chair gave kind of a pitch at the meeting when we passed them out to everybody. We had emailed them in advance, and then we gave them all a paper copy at the meeting. And she said, like you said, you know, stretching, and we really want to see, if possible, a 10% increase in everyone's giving.
Yeah.
And everybody did. I think I've only seen one where someone maintained their same gift as last year, but everybody stretched. And we raise, I would say, about $170,000 annually from our board.
That's excellent.
Towards our campaign.
That's outstanding. Now, you have a huge board.
Yeah.
Bigger than I've ever heard of. So, but hey, that's more money for your foundation, right? So it sounds like the form you use is very similar. And the board service pledge form can be anything you make it. And it should be focused around what the board member is going to be doing for your organization. So it sounds like you did that really well. You also said you front-loaded, which is what I meant when I say front load at the beginning of your fiscal year. You front loaded at the beginning of your campaign, which makes perfect sense. They're the foundation. They're giving you the ability to understand what your basement is going to be, what it's going to look like. And then that gap is what you're filling. So that's terrific. I'm sure that the other people would enjoy seeing the form.
I just wanted to send it to you, Lisa. Should I send it to you if
sure.
I find it?
But Keith, I was interested. Katie has something to say, so I'll stop. But what you said that I thought was so interesting was the activities. It wasn't just 10% increase in finances, which is very important, but all those other activities. I thought that was pretty good, you know, that list of different types of ideas.
Yeah.
But Katie, did you have something you wanted to say?
Yeah, I just had a question. I mean, we've been successful with board giving and having 100% giving. Our challenge is when we have an event, you know, we had a 75th anniversary event, we're almost at our 80th, our board engages people and brings them to the event, but it's really challenging on an ongoing basis to get them to engage their community members and their friends in the work of JEVS. I mean, so that's one of the things that we're trying to work on, is making sure that we have enough opportunities to get them to bring people and engage other people, but that's always been a challenge. It's, they'll ask them if there's a very specific event, come attend this event and, you know, give to JEVS at that time, but what, how do we engage them kind of on an ongoing basis to help them engage their community members?
Good question. Really good question. So when you talk about engaging people, you mean at the events themselves?
So just educating them more about the work.
What was that?
Educating them more about the work that we do, asking them for a gift, you know, getting them kind of connected to us.
Okay. So
And we do have a give get. So we, I mean, a part of it was we tried to, because we did a give get, was that was kind of the hope that, you know, not only would they give, but they would help us, you know, engage others in giving. But that hasn't been, they've all stepped up with the giving, which has been wonderful. Yep. But the getting has been not as strong.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. So I've always been a little, I go back and forth on the give get policy. I think it works for some organizations and it doesn't work for others. So I think it's a personal preference based on the resources and what you need for your organization. However, there are things that I've done in the past in order to get my board members to connect more people with the organization, or to in some way get them to bring more people into the fold. I talked a little bit about the cultivation events, all right? We didn't do those before we started our capital campaign for the community center I mentioned earlier. And it was through cultivation events. We just did three in 1 year, the first year. We'd never done them before. We identified three different unique locations to host them. So I live in Newport, Rhode Island, and we have a lot of mansions, a lot of rich people. Not that they're giving lots of money to our, they were giving lots of money to our organization, but I think you get it. So everybody wants to see inside somebody's home, right? You always want to see inside. Ooh, interesting. So we picked three different locations. We even had a boat club that we had one of them at. But looking at unique locations, looking at businesses, maybe restaurants, you might have a donor. But that's one way of piquing somebody's interest. The next step is getting your board members to think about who they want to connect to the organization. And that's going to be a little bit through our next section. It's called the sphere of influence exercise. I'm going to talk a little bit about how that works and how it could benefit your organization in identifying and getting more people interested in what you're doing, or at least going out and connecting with those people and finding out whether or not there is an interest in supporting your organization. But I do think that board members play the most important role in connecting potential donors to your organization. There are a number of activities that can be used to do that, cultivation events being one of them. And then the biggest way in which you can do that is the next part of this presentation, which we're going to move into now. Okay? Does that kind of answer your question?
It does. Thank you very much. Great. Really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Great segue.
All right, so we'll go. Any other questions?
I'm just curious to know, like, who has a board minimum or not? Like, I was thinking when Amy told her story, do they have a board minimum? Because we've been talking about upping our board minimum, and you just said that we shouldn't be having a board minimum. So it's just...
Well, how's it working? How's it working for you now?
It's working fine, and people are very much, they're more generous than most, the majority of the board is more generous than the minimum. So that's why we're thinking about upping it to, you know, but, yeah. And there are some people, a few people that I've noticed now that aren't meeting their minimum. So it's more of a conversation between the board president and them of why they're not meeting them.
Right. So it sounds like you've overcome some of the hurdles that can pop up with board minimums. And it sounds like you're addressing those that do pop up with a small number of board members. And that situation with the small number of board members is what I was talking about. And generally, it's best to avoid that at the very beginning of their board service. That's the only reason I wanted to bring that up. The minimum gift level might be the right thing for organizations. It sounds like it works for your organization. So I don't recommend that you get rid of it in any way. It wasn't something that worked for me on multiple occasions with multiple organizations, because I also served on boards. What it does do, though, is it can support organizations in a way that makes sense when you are setting that minimum gift. If it works, do it. You don't want to undercut, okay?
Right. So we were talking about, like, there is a privilege somewhat to be on a board, and there's a financial sort of responsibility, even though what you said makes sense to me also, like, the people have their expertise and their, you know, that their work and their wisdom was worth something, not only their wealth.
Yeah. I also think it depends on the type of board members that you're bringing onto your organization. You know, if you are a smaller fledgling organization and, you know, you're just building your sea legs, it might not be the best time to be setting a minimum gift, because you really need people that are rolling up their sleeves and helping with that organization. If you're a well-resourced organization, it makes more sense to strategically recruit your board members, yes, based around what they're bringing to the table in terms of their own personal affiliations, attorneys, communication specialists, and so forth. But it also makes sense to think about those board members having means and being able to make those minimum gifts. So I think it really depends on the size of your organization and how well-resourced you are. Any other questions? Okay, we'll move back into the next section.
Okay,
so we're gonna move into that next piece, which was, remember, it is identifying and planning, okay? Here we go. So, every board of directors and every individual has a sphere of influence, okay? And you want to help your board identify and plan around their sphere of influence. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about an exercise. The first time I ever went through this exercise was in 2009. And it was in advance of us really digging into our capital campaign for the Child and Family Community Center. Like I said, it was a $7 million campaign. We reserved a conference room at the Newport Hospital because we didn't have a lot of meeting space. We were in the original orphanage in Newport, Rhode Island. That's 1866. So we had bare bones. So we had to reserve space at the local hospital to have this meeting. We asked all board members, it was mandatory for all board members, and we had about a 18-20 member board at the time. We identified some key stakeholders in the community, business owners, local community leaders who had raised their hand for our organization. And then we identified some of our most loyal and supportive donors and volunteers also to be a part of this exercise. And I would say there were probably about 30, 32 people in the room other than staff. And they were all people that support the organization. So what I did was I printed out copies for each person in attendance. I printed out a copy of our donor list. And it was, you know, probably about maybe 20 pages deep at the time. It gave them the ability to make notes. And then next to that list, I had a blank pad and a pen. And then basically what we did was we asked everybody sitting around the table, by the way, make sure there's food, and if possible, if it's an evening exercise, wine. It helps, believe me. So we asked everybody to go through this list. The meeting is under the cone of silence, and that means it's confidential. We're talking about people's business. We're talking about people's lives, and it's really to benefit our organization. And as board members and donors, we make it very clear to everybody in the room that this is personal information and confidential. We are trying to build a campaign. We're trying to strengthen our donor base, and we need your help. We want you to go through this list and identify those people on the list that you think we should be, A, inviting to be a part of what we're about to do, whether it be a cultivation event, a capital campaign, just growing our donor base, And what is the circumstance? You know, we looked at a lot of lapsed donors. Well, what was their situation? What was going on in their lives? And the conversations that took place during this meeting were very frank, and people were taking notes furiously, I forget which one.
Both,
there we go. And they were tracking. And basically we went through the list. Joe is putting his kids through college. It might not be a good time to approach him for a gift. Oh, yeah, they just bought that big business on the other side of town. That's definitely an opportunity. Or they just sold their business. They're supporting another organization that has the same mission as ours. It might be a good opportunity for us to approach them. So we were building strategies around each individual on this list. Because the next step with that list was, okay, who's connected to these people? Who's willing to reach out to them and maybe schedule coffee or invite them in for a tour or to meet with our executive director or to come to our next benefit event? These are the things that we developed around strategies with each individual. So as we went through each individual, based on the information people around the table were providing, we were developing the strategies on how to approach these people. The next step was to say, okay, we've gone through this list, all right? We've gone through this list. Now I want you to think about who's not on the list and who do you need to put on that blank pad next to the list? And what do we need to know about them? Who is not on this list? Who do you know that you've talked to about your organization that has not volunteered, has not made a gift, or is aware, maybe they made a small gift because they're your friend, but they have the potential to make a larger gift or to make multiple gifts or to buy tickets or to help you solicit gifts. Whatever it is, you're building strategies around that blank pad and that list on the blank pad as much as you are on the donor list, right? So you're getting your board up to speed, excited and fired up about this process. You're scheduling the brainstorming session with your entire board. You're refining and segmenting the list that you develop from that session. And you're holding a major donor screening. That's basically what it is. It's a donor screening. And that, I think, is the best way to take an inventory of your board's sphere of influence and identifying who they know, how they know them, who they know else that could identify and connect other people. So it's like you're going out, one circle, if you take a look back at this one, you see, these circles can be this circle here. Can they see my cursor?
Yes.
You can, okay. So this person can be this, these circles just, they spread out as you go through this exercise.
Right.
Okay. So when you're going through this exercise, you're going to look at three different qualifying categories. There's capacity, how much could they give if they were properly motivated and approached by the right person and or people. And that's the strategy piece. Who's going to open up the door? Who's going to make the phone call? Who's going to invite them in? Should it be multiple people? Should it be the board chair and the ED? Should it be the person that they know and the executive director? All these things have to come into your strategy and activity building. What is their interest? Are they known to give to causes with similar mission? Have they raised their hand for other organizations whose mission is almost the same as yours? If that's the case, they're probably going to be interested in your organization as well. And the third category is, what's their connection? Who is the best person to contact the prospective donor? And that goes back to the strategy. So it's capacity, it's interest, and it's connection. You want to manage your time and focus on those three categories. Focus on the low-hanging fruit. So when you're going through this and you're strategizing and you're developing from the sphere of influence exercise, the best candidate, the most and best low-hanging fruit is going to be somebody who has all three of these things, okay? The next best is going to be somebody who has both capacity and connection. So they have the means to make a decent gift to your organization, and they're also connected through somebody, all right? And then your third most valuable is going to be connection and interest. So you want to approach the sphere of influence exercise and how you go through these lists with these three categories in mind, and you're using them to develop your strategies and how you're going to approach the individuals on your lists and what you're going to be connecting them to. Okay? Any questions so far?
I just wrote that I think is an excellent slide. You know, very clear.
You know,
1, 2, and 3.
And if you don't have anybody that meets these categories, it's this. They're a long shot. So yep. You focus on your low-hanging fruit and don't go after the long shots until you've gone through that low-hanging fruit, okay?
Have people, any agencies done this cultivation kind of activities and really thought about the strategy? Anyone? Wendy in Ann Arbor? I don't know, it seems like a very good idea. My old job, we did that a lot in New York City. And, you know, you just need one person who can give a lot of money, and it worked.
Yep, it sounds like Michelle's done it. Belinda and Tara thinking about doing it. Yeah, okay. I think it's a great exercise. I think it works. It worked for us. We raised the amount of money we needed to raise for our capital campaign. Granted, it was a 2-year campaign, but we still raised the amount of money. We didn't have to raise the full $7 million. We had to raise $3.5 million. The rest of it was through financing and other means, but we hit our goal, and this kicked it off.
Yeah,
this started that process. Okay. All right. I'm going to go back.
Yep. I don't know. Can you guys see me? Yes.
Yes.
I wanted to add something that I think is a good thing to do even when you're doing this exercise. When you're taking a look at your whole database of people who have given, even those lapsed donors, some of those lapsed donors might be lower hanging fruit than some of the ones that are just giving every year without thinking about it. And I think that as far as engaging your board members and the people who are your go-to, it may be that we identify by going through this sphere of influence exercise that we find people who are good in another area, for another program, for a different event, for chairing, for bringing onto the board. So many different things can be identified when you're doing this strategy exercise. And I think it's a wonderful, clean, you know, example of something that we can set aside different compartments as we go through this exercise. And I need to do it as well. So
would this exercise be done at a retreat, at a board meeting?
We did it off cycle outside of our regular board meetings. Because we wanted people, because we were bringing in volunteers, we were bringing in stakeholders other than board members.
Right.
And we wanted it to be a serious conversation. We wanted it to be a lengthy meeting. It took us 2.5 hours to go through this process. It might have even taken 3 hours.
Yeah.
But we had dinner, we had wine. It worked. And Sarah brings up a good point. You know how I was talking about our cultivation events? Well, as we were going through this process, we were able to identify multiple people that could possibly host a cultivation event. So that's in-kind support. We were able to identify businesses that we could approach. We were able to identify people that were connected to things that we would need down the road, like possibly catering or something to that effect. So you're right, it doesn't all have to be about identifying the amount of money the people through the sphere of influence of exercise can give, but more about how they can connect to your organization and support it. Yeah, the money is the most important piece, I'm not gonna lie. But the rest of it is just as important in terms of planning and preparing your annual development work, okay?
So, so Wendy just wrote that Wendy from Ann Arbor, you know, when she said, sorry about that. She tried to jump in, but the call disconnected. She does qualify and cultivate donors, and she's happy to chat about it. So you want to say a little bit about what you do now, Wendy?
Yes, take 2 here.
Okay.
We do both qualify and cultivate our donors. We're in the middle of a $5 million campaign for both annual and reserve funds. And we have worked with sort of those three circles that you had up on the slide just a moment ago. And I think that we started with the low-hanging fruit as well. Looking at, we did a printout of all our donors who had given more than $1,000 or $1,200. We went through it with not our board, but our campaign committee, which was made up of some board members, of course, but a different committee, and evaluated them much the same as you talked about in that exercise you mentioned with the board, and looked at both their capacity, their affinity to the organization, and their past history. And we're doing the initial cultivation through parlor meetings. They've been very successful. And then we're following up. The invitation indicates there will be no solicitation at the meeting. And we use the parlor meeting to talk about an update of JFS activities. This is a countywide Jewish Family Services headquartered in Ann Arbor. And then we talk about the campaign, and then we follow up with everybody who attends each parlor meeting and do one-on-one solicitation. Or sometimes it's two-on-one. Some, you know, it could be myself and a lay leader or two lay leaders or something like that.
Yeah. Wendy, it sounds like you've got a plan that's working really well for your organization. And you went through this process at the very beginning and discovered how useful it is. So that's good.
I was just going to say, Wendy, it sounds like you go to all of those meetings in your role as the director of development. Is that your role?
That is my role. I go to most of them. There are times that it's just two lay leaders, or occasionally one lay leader. What we do is we talk about who's the best person to make that visit. Sometimes it's not me. Sometimes it's a lay leader or two because they have, you know, that's where the relationship lies. Incidentally, we did approach all of our board members first. So we have 100% board participation in the campaign. And that was, you know, where we invited board members to campaigns first. And you must be a donor to the campaign in order to host or co-host a parlor meeting.
Mm-hmm. Helene asks, for Mercer County, do you go through that exercise with the board? You got that as a group or individually?
Yeah, so it's a group. It's a group exercise. You're bringing all those people that I talked about, your board members, your former board members. That's another piece I wanted to throw out there. Former board members, we had not tapped into our former board members in a long time. So I spent a lot of time bringing them back into the fold. And one of the ways in which we did that was through the sphere of influence exercise. We invited them to participate so that they would feel like they were just as important as they always were. We just had let it lapse. Do not let that happen, because they can supplement your current board and play a huge role in supporting fundraising as well. But we do it as a group, Helene. And there were close to 32 people in the room. And, you know, there were facilitators and coordinators. My executive director was there. I was there. A number of other staff members were there. The chair of the development committee, who was a board member, was there. But they also knew what we were going to be doing. We had all planned it out. So that's how I would go about doing this.
So Katie from Philly, Jeb's in Philly, they did it, the sphere of influence with the Capital campaign. And Belinda and Tara are going to do it in West Palm. And Elaine wants to know if it's a one-time exercise or do you do it annually?
Mm-hmm. Good question. Very good question. We did it. This was the first time I did it. As far as I know, they had never done this before in this way. We ended up, after we were done with the campaign, because once you do it for the campaign, it was a two-year campaign. My recommendation is that organizations do this on an annual basis, because basically what you're doing is you're refreshing everything. And you're adding to it. So you're looking at, okay, who's passed, which is, you know, not a good topic, who has moved out of town, is not supporting organizations in the area, but you're also looking at, okay, so who's new in town? What new businesses have opened up? Who has new neighbors that they want to get more involved in the community? So these are all things in which that can help your annual giving, not just a campaign. So my recommendation is to do it at least once per year with your board and any other stakeholders you want to bring to the table. Okay, so I'm just going to go back with one more slide. And that's it. Oop, wrong one. How do you close that? Where are we? Share. I thought it was that one. Sorry about that. That is it. What happened?
I don't know. I don't think that's it.
Yeah, that was the one I was looking at. Okay. Sorry about this, guys. Hold on. Got one more slide. We're going to try to get there one more time. I think this is it.
No.
Well, if it doesn't happen, you can just tell us and I will email everyone. I'll
get found it.
How to get it.
Got it. Okay. So food for thought and future use. Do you know who your organization's top three donors are? Are they connected to your organization in other ways? Do you know the amount of the largest gift your organization received from an individual donor last year? And how did it impact your organization? Now, here's what I'm going to say. These are important things to know if you're going out and soliciting donors. You can use the information from these questions as leverage. You might get asked these questions by a high-end donor who might be asking you. So you want to have this information handy. The other piece that I recommend, and this is my last thought around solicitation, and that is, if you have a top flight donor that made a large gift last year and it had some major impact, and you're about to commence a campaign or start your annual solicitations, call that donor and say to them, do you mind if I use your name and your gift in my meetings moving forward? The reason is because often you're able to use that gift as leverage to share how another major gift has impacted your organization, who that person was, because they might know them. People are always trying to outdo others, right? And the impact, the person, and the amount, all important things. Okay? One more slide. You don't have to be afraid to fundraise. You're not begging for money. Your belief and excitement will be infectious, okay? The donor is the joyful giver. Your organization is the grateful recipient, and you are the artful asker. That's it.
Great. Thank you so much, Keith. That was great. Really appreciate it. I feel like that last slide is like a great slide to share with your board members, right? That they're like, that's the speech we're supposed to give them. Yep. As well.
Don't give up.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, great. So we just wanted to tell everyone that our next topic is going to be broadening your donor base. Feel free to email Lisa with any of your feedback from today, or, you know, Sarah and myself as well. We're happy to hear what you thought and what you would want more of or less of in the future. But, you know, the next topic is going to be broadening your donor base, and Lisa will send out a reminder email with who the presenter is, and, you know, hopefully lots of time for people to interact. So get a camera, because it's more fun to see people's faces and be able to be more interactive.
And Lisa, you're gonna you've already posted the sheets, the homework sheets.
I sent them to Megan to do, so hopefully it'll be up by the end of today.
Thank you.
If not already.
Thanks, everyone.
Terrific.
Thank you, Sarah.
Post it. Let us know anything you have to say. Keep in touch with us. We want this to be the best group that we can for our development professionals. And thank you, Keith. It was
thank
great.
Thank you, Keith, so much.
Yeah. You're welcome.
thank you,
Sarah, for sharing your office with him.
Of course.